the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at BEC attacks. Now, following the COVID-19 outbreak, fraudsters have been taking advantage of the panic and new working conditions to socially engineer victims. Now, the result has been a significant uptick in business email compromise attacks. So companies need to take additional steps, including adding additional payment and account verification processes in order to prevent losses and protect consumers. So to help me with today's episode, I've got David Benart, who is the Chief Experience Officer at GIACT, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot to unpack in today's episode, so without any further delay, let's start the show. So David and Tim, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, where we're taking a look at another unfortunate opportunity that fraudsters have during this COVID-19 outbreak that we have. So to start off today's conversation, David, could you, enlighten our audience to some of the data that your organization has that I think will help set the tone for today's conversation, particularly around BEC attacks?
Sure. When we look at the business email compromise attacks, roughly $2 billion is lost every year, according to the latest statistics from the FBI. 80% of the surveyed businesses reported being targeted by a BEC scam, and that's coming out of the AFP, the Association for Financial Professionals, and they also released a statistic that says that 54% of businesses admitted to being financially impacted by BEC. So, it's certainly something that's on the fraud radar. It's something that is, unfortunately being orchestrated with ease, and our businesses are, they're pretty much reeling from this because of the sophistication of the types of attacks.
It's interesting. The FBI has also identified that these types of attacks are happening more frequently due to COVID. They gave two recent examples of emails to a bank to change an address because the coronavirus outbreak and quarantine processes had shut down the bank in China that the money was originally supposed to go to. So using the fact that people are out with coronavirus enables the criminals to be able to more easily target and take advantage of business.
Excellent. Now, I understand that BEC attacks might be somewhat of an industry term here. So, David, perhaps you could give us a little bit of a definition of what BEC attacks, what the definition is before we jump into our next question.
Sure. A business email compromise is effectively when a controller or someone with financial authority receives an email, a phone call, or some type of request. It can even be via the mail, a written letter. Asking for a controller to change the payment instructions of a particular supplier or someone that they owe. And, what typically happens is, these communications are very, very good in their ingenuity, meaning they use an email address from someone that is known to them potentially, and they may change a character or a symbol within an email, but if you're just glancing at it or you're not verifying that email, that's the email of a fraud operator. We've heard, and we'll talk about this more later, but we've heard instances where real voice prints of CEOs call into a controller and say, I need to immediately set up a payment in either wire or ACH. Typically it's wire and pay this supplier. So the orchestration of this is effectively for a fraud operator to trick someone in accounts payable or someone with financial authority over a business to, effectively pay them versus the legitimate, the legitimate recipient.
I think a great example was the Ubiquiti theft. Ubiquiti lost $46 million. An email ostensibly coming from the CEO went to the new CFO telling him to expect a confidential call from the lawyers. And the CFO knew the law office, and he gets a call from somebody claiming to be their lawyer. He had never spoken to the person before, The lawyer said that they were doing an acquisition, needed $46 million sent immediately to a particular bank account, and the CFO did it.
You know, what the statistics really are telling us, you know, with BEC is that we have a significant problem. The business email compromise, it's been around for years, but we're now seeing new methods of how this fraud has evolved. You know, and back to your points earlier, now more than ever, more people are working from home, and this means controllers and those folks with that financial authority, and they've lost the power of collaboration. You know, a lot of processes that companies put in place to catch business email compromise are increasingly more difficult because it requires segregation of duties, which is easier to accomplish in person versus when you're virtual. You know, what we're seeing by these numbers is the efficiencies in the fraud game. Unless companies use proper tools and take the time to evaluate these requests, going back to checking the email, verifying a phone number, even verifying the identity, coupled with the email IP address, and then ultimately just picking up the phone and calling the verified number of the person that you know you're calling. You know, these things are going to continue, but, you know, we recently rolled out a white paper here at GIACT around business email compromise and how much it has had an uptick with, you know, COVID and the work from home. And, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. That was the largest download of any white paper that we've ever done in the first day. And it's continuing to be downloaded because a lot of people are looking for resources to say, how can I better protect? How can I stop? Or at least take the time to verify a request that's coming in. And think about it. There's a lot of changes in payment requests in just normal general business. So now more than ever, the fraud operators are hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And certainly for those who are following along on paymentjournal.com, we'll provide a link for that particular white paper in the article below. And now, Tim and David, you guys were talking about some of the different schemes. And I know Tim gave a very specific one there around BEC attacks. But I'm potentially taking a look and saying, David, could you share with us some of the schemes that you're seeing currently right now and potentially some of the things that could be coming down the line that you could potentially see fraudsters trying to take advantage of? Maybe this comes in the form of just AI or something like that, that organizations should start to be aware of now so when they can kind of plan of better how to defend themselves, they'll be aware of what's going on today, but then also how to, and I'm using air quotes here because it's kind of hard to do this, but future-proof some of that fraud, those BECE attacks that we're talking about.
Yeah, and there are really several tactics that the BEC fraudsters are using. You know, standard phishing schemes, more complex attacks using malware, spear phishing, attacks on payroll. And if you think about it, if they get into your system or they see traffic between emails, they see who you email, who you send automated invoices to, you know, what those accounts receivable, you know, contacts are, these are all things that the fraudsters use to socially engineer and trick unwitting victims to click on a, you know, or to click in a link or, you know, misdirect funds. You know, these tactics have gotten so advanced recently. You know, as I mentioned, they're even now mimicking voice, the actual voice of a company's CEO. And I believe that particular incident, they walked away with, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, the changes associated again with the outbreak of COVID-19, more people working from home, you know, frauds are still getting in. They're using this to perfect a lot of what they've already been doing. But, you know, I've seen schemes where, you know, the logos, the format of the emails, the email looks and, you know, without literally verifying unique and specific pieces of the email, like the email address, the domains, et cetera, you know, you can be tricked into, you know, potentially changing a payment account around. So, you know, these guys are really perfecting what they're doing. They're looking and continually evolving these tactics because people still click links, they still download malware, they still answer, you know, an email, not knowing they may answer the first email, hey, are you there? I need to talk, or we need to set up something new. Sure, what do you have? And now they've already started to trust that email, right? So again, there's many ways they can orchestrate this, but it all comes back to taking the time to verify certain pertinent pieces of information and ultimately just pick up the phone and call someone if you know who they are directly.
In some ways, that's all true. And in some ways, small businesses are easier to take advantage of because often they work less through authentication of the individual, memos and the like internally, and they deal more with casual communications. So the example you gave of asking for a payroll change wouldn't be unusual for a CFO in a small company to simply get an email from one of their employees saying, I've changed my bank. Can you, change my payroll? It's very easy to do.
All right. So now kind of taking a look at what Tim was talking about there and just of how the ease of use of fraudsters being able to kind of manipulate the system here and kind of use that a little bit of social engineering here. David, I'd love to kind of get from you this kind of a little bit of a two-parter here. Some steps first that people themselves could particularly take in helping to prevent these scams. And then also from your organization's perspective, what can your organization bring to it? Because I think it really is kind of those that 1-2 punch there, because, and I think I might've brought this up before in a conversation that we've had with you, is that I love this little Far Side comic where it has, it looks like this boxing ring, and in one corner, it kind of shows the, hey, this is the most sophisticated AI technology that money has to buy. And in this corner, we have Bob. And Bob, you can just tell, is just clicking on everything under the sun and just downloading all this malware. So I think it's very important to kind of have that two breakdown of like, well, what can people themselves do? And then what can GIACT in particular bring to this to really kind of help prevent these scams?
You know, there are several things businesses can do. And it all starts with the right tools and detecting critical pieces of information. And I'll dive into some of that critical information shortly. First, they need to verify the incoming email, the email address, the phone numbers if they're getting a phone call, really depending on how they're being contacted. Importantly, however, to stop losses, businesses need to verify payment account information on every single payment. And last but certainly not least, as I mentioned, reach out to the person requesting the change. I mean, usually they'll have a contact number of these folks, call it on a verified phone number that you can look up in real time. Some companies use secret words or tokens that may be required to make payment account changes. You know, all of these are good practices that help to reduce BEC, depending on the sophistication of that company or, what their policies and procedures are. But given the increased sophistication of these attacks, it's making it difficult for even the most attentive employee to catch a potentially fraudulent scheme. Or trying to validate an account number in real time before the funds are sent. So, one of the most effective ways to really detect the payment account is through a robust account validation. That goes simply beyond confirming if an account is open and valid. But, businesses need to be able to run all their payments against a stricter validation process, which includes the status of the account ownership. Is this account your customer's account, or are those signers authorized to transact on that account? And then obviously check identity records on the business, including the name, address, phone numbers, email address, domains, the email specifically that was sent to you. We have tools that can validate if that email is in fact a valid corporate domain, or if it's something that was set up 2 days ago. So when you couple all those things together, I validate the email, there's a red flag. That is not GIACT.com. That's, GIOCT.com. I may glance and think it is, but it's really not. Secondly, is the account that I'm being asked to direct funds to, is it open valid? And oh, by the way, is my customer the owner of that account, or is the signer that I typically deal with that is on the account that I've normally dealt with, is that signer on this account? And then, the phone number, if they're calling in, running an identity on that business to see if that is a verified phone number, if it's area code specific, if it's specific to the business itself. you start putting together the triangle of trust. Jared, you've got three independent corroborating sources that are telling you the email's bad, the payment account is bad, and this phone number does not match. That would be an easy tell to then stop the payment, take time to call that person, call or verify with other, you know, entities at that company if that is in fact a true request. But it's the culmination of efforts. It's probably not a single silver bullet. Account validation goes a long way. It goes a significant long way in stopping this. But if you really want the true picture of a potential business email compromise, you need to throw several products at it. So, you know, it goes beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is an attempt to steal funds. This isn't a real request to wire anything. And again, you know, I would even say if a company's CEO calls, most companies can then go right back through that CEO's admin to say, hey, I need to verify with the boss that this transaction is something that he is in fact requesting. Don't take the secrecy for granted. If that individual calls you and tells you this is secret, call them, call the real person back and actually ask them if that is something that's true and correct. They won't be reprimanded for such, you know, things, but it's something that will, you know, they should be praised for doing because you're trying to protect the company and protect the company's assets.
Yes, and if they have the budget, I will do to do some white hat testing. We assume all employees have the same level of suspicion as we do, who are constantly evaluating this type of fraud, and they don't. Doing their job very well, but tend to be overly trusting. And so having the training in to help employees understand how these fraud issues take over and that you would appreciate it if they went that extra distance to validate is all step one. Step two might be to start hiring somebody to try to penetrate.
No, David, thank you very much for that there. Now, for this last question, I'd really like to put a finer point around some of the key points that you brought up in your previous answer. So, David, I'm hoping that you can help explain how payment or account verification process can help to protect businesses and their consumers.
Account validation is coming directly from financial institutions. It's a real-time feed, and it's updated daily. So even if it is a brand-new account, that was opened yesterday at the FI, and it's a legitimate account, that account would be contributed, and it would be something that would be in the database. So it's not something that, would be relatively easy for fraudsters. They would literally have to go open an account. They'd have to pass for a specific company, but again, that's not saying it can't happen. But that's why we recommend using the other tools and services like email validation, identity, which encompasses phone numbers, to be able to round out the picture. But account validation certainly goes a very long way. It is probably the number one product that is used by a lot of our, the businesses that have controllers that are continuously setting up new payments or changing payments. That is the first product in line. It's a very, very popular for just that instance. It's not so much if the customer can pay, it's, you know, how much or who am I paying? But they do accompany that with email intelligence as well as some identity to be able to get to the bottom of, you know, is this the true and correct company that I'm really sending funds to?
Hey, David, how do you present that information to the user?
So the user would send us a routing transit account number, name, address for the account, and we reach out to the financial institution in real time, and they validate that the account is in fact open valid, and they will give us back yes or no if the information that was provided is actually on the record at the bank. So it's not going to come back and say, you said ABC company, but it's really John Smith. It's not going to do that. It's just going to come back and say, sorry, that's a fail. That is not the name that is listed on the account. And it's done that way to alleviate any type of reverse engineering. So you can't figure out who is actually on the account, but you're validating the actual name that is on the account.
Right. So Does this fit in line with their existing processes, or is this an extra step they take?
It actually is used in the accounts receivable.
Oh, hold on 1 second. Somebody, we're getting really, really bad echo from it. I'm not sure what it is, but yeah, David, if you could just start over from the top. Sorry about that.
Yeah, let's just test. Yeah, it's gone now. So accounts receivable uses this not only for setting up new payment accounts, but also for debiting. You know, if they're debiting consumer accounts on the consumer side for whatever it is they're selling to consumers, they're making sure that A, the account is open valid and they can debit it. And number two, their customer is in fact the person that has the right to transact on that account, because they want to prevent administrative as well as unauthorized ACH returns. But on the flip side, you know, those same controllers that are working on the debits of the money coming in before they're shipping money out, they're using it in a reverse sense to verify before they send or remit a payment that the account is open valid and that the customer they're remitting the funds to is their actual customer. And again, they use the other tools in conjunction with that, but that is very telling. Again, if they're asked to change a payment account and they think it's ABC Company and they run through our service and we come back and say, nope, ABC Company is not on the account, that is the red flag, the significant red flag that is, you know, time for pause so they can start picking up the phone and calling the verified number to see if, in fact, a request has came in to change it.
All right. Well, David and Tim, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about BEC attacks, and I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.